From One World Trade Center in Manhattan, overlooking dozens of golf courses that will never have us as members, this is the Golf Digest Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the Golf Digest Podcast. I'm Ryan Harrington, Deputy Editor at GolfDigest.com. With less than 2 weeks remaining in 2016, tis the season to look back at what happened during this season and assess the year that it was. We recently unveiled our 18 biggest newsmakers for the year on the website, and in this week's podcast, I'm joined by fellow editors Jaime Diaz and Alex Myers to try to take a broad look at what transpired in 2016 and give it some context. Guys, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thanks for having me.
Guys, I'm going to open it very broadly. Was 2016 a memorable year in golf? In 5 or 10 years, will we be talking about what happened this year, or will this year kind of just be forgotten? Alex, what do you think?
Oh, I think without a doubt. I think there were so many things that happened. Obviously, throughout the whole year, you had this storyline involving Tiger of if he was going to come back or not. You had, sadly, the passing of Arnold Palmer. You had just an incredible Ryder Cup. And you had four first-time major champs in 1 year, which, you know, is a little unusual, obviously. And one of them in particular, Dustin Johnson, obviously had the best year of anybody. And it looks like he finally took that next leap to being a superstar. So I think it'll be known as the year that Dustin Johnson broke out, the year, sadly, again, that Arnold Palmer passed away, and the year that Tiger Woods maybe finally started this last comeback in his illustrious career.
Dustin Johnson, as those who've read it already on the website know, was our number one newsmaker of the year, and primarily because of obviously that breakout win at Oakmont. Jaime, what do you think? Do you think it was a memorable year in golf?
You know, I think as it was happening, I didn't feel like it was, you know, this landmark year. However, there were a lot of landmarks. I mean, the Olympics will be remembered as a historic moment, I think. You know, Jim Furyk shot 58. Again, you don't always appreciate it when it happened, but, I mean, we talked about Al Geiberger being Mr. 59 forever,
sure,
and 59,
sure.
58 is a new landmark. And then I think Jordan Spieth sort of stopping his momentum at the Masters. I hope it doesn't happen in terms of the long term, but I think it was a moment in which he went off the main stage as the top player and kind of opened the field up. Even though Jason Day was number one, I still think people thought that because Jordan had won two before and almost won the Grand Slam, he was really the player of the future. And right now I think he's got to regather. And that Masters of 2016 may go down as the moment when Jordan Spieth stopped being, you know, the it man, so to speak.
Well, it looks like perhaps that mantle might go to Dustin Johnson. And Jaime, you wrote for Golf World and on the website an expanded thing on Dustin and why he indeed was who we considered our newsmaker of the year. What do you think this year meant in terms of the context of his career? Because obviously he's been known to have issues closing out majors, and this year not only did he close it out, but he closed it out under really unusual circumstances. What did this year do for Dustin in his career?
Well, I think Dustin was going through this transitional period that was leaving a big question mark, because basically he made a big breakthrough when he went on his leave of absence, came back, won Doral immediately. It looked like he was re-energized, re-motivated, rededicated, and then Chambers Bay happened. And Chambers Bay was a gut punch like very few players have ever endured or survived, frankly. And he took that, while it took him a few months, I'm sure, although he didn't talk a lot about it, and he's always very nonchalant, it had to affect his confidence. He went for a long 15 months without a victory, which is about the longest period
sure.
he had a drought since he was a rookie. So something was going on. He was playing consistently, but he wasn't closing the deal. And then for Oakmont to happen the way it happened, where he just drove the ball historically well, he had a certain desire and dedication and determination in his eyes and face that was different, I thought. And he just, to me, he matured as a player, as someone who went away from just potential to actual possible greatness. And I think that's the next step for him. He's on the verge of greatness.
In 2004, Phil Mickelson finally broke through, won that Masters after trying so hard to win his first major championship. And that, you could argue, has propelled him to the other majors that he's won. Do you think that is the case now for Dustin? Do you think that getting through that barrier here, and he obviously won a few other tournaments the rest of the year, he didn't win another major, but he won some big events, nearly won the FedEx Cup. Do you see this as the quote-unquote catalyst to more majors in his career, or do you think he'll look at himself differently now and perhaps play differently because of that?
I think he looks at himself differently, and I think he knows he's very capable. You know, Phil was a more prolific winner, and, you know, while he hadn't won majors, he'd won about 30 tournaments by the time he won his first major. Dustin doesn't have that pedigree, but he's won 12 times. The main thing about Dustin is he's always in the hunt because his ball striking is so good. He can be a little erratic, but in general, he's gaining on the field with his ball striking. And what the next step has to be is great wedge play and great putting. He really made huge strides in both those areas, especially the wedge. I think the putter's the next frontier. When he switched to that Jason Day-style putter that Taylor made, it seemed like he started putting a lot better. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it would take much for him to win a lot of majors if he became a good putter. Right now he's, at best, an average putter. He was a poor putter prior to that. And I think given that he has this physical gift for hitting the golf ball and he starts liking what he's doing and feeling like, you know, this is my destiny, this is what I want to be, I want to be a great player, and the putter happens, and there's a lot of conditions, but I think he's on the verge of all of them. I think mentally he's like enjoying what's happening to him right now. It's like, I actually have this inside me. I can do it. There had to be a lot of doubt from the failures of the past, and I think Oakmont like wiped the slate clean on that.
It's interesting because from my perspective, when you look at Dustin, you do wonder at times, because he seems so laid back on the golf course, whether how much it means to him, how much this whole thing does mean to him. And I think you're right. I do get the impression that finally breaking through there, you did see a little emotion. You did see and realize this does mean something to him. And perhaps psychologically, he does realize he's on the precipice here. He could really break out in his career, be a standout player. Not, you know, he's already known very well for this win streak of having one win in every season for a number of years. But to add majors to it is really what's going to take him to that next level. And perhaps that's what's happened this past year, obviously. Alex, do you think, do you see Dustin now having more confidence and perhaps becoming a transcendent player? Not that he wasn't obviously playing well before, but that this really changing the way he is going to be perceived by fans and others alike?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I think you saw it right away at the British Open following his win at Oakmont. He was asked about maybe tracking down Jason Day for that number one spot. He took it all in stride. He kind of gave off the impression that he just thinks it's a matter of time before he takes that mantle from Jason Day or all these other guys. He made it like he'd want that title. He wouldn't feel the pressures maybe that others have before. And I think Jaime makes a great point. The fact that he's always in the mix is what's so scary to other players. I think that the two stats that really jumped out at me for him this year were in 22 starts, 15 top 10s and 11 top 5s. So that's half the time he teed it up. He was in the top 5. That is just, you know, stuff that really only Tiger Woods in the modern recent era has put up a season like that. So just an incredible season from him, and certainly, you know, he could play it off all he wants about how he let all the disappointments roll off his back, and I think he did to some extent, but man, if he had lost at Oakmont this year, like Jaime said, that would have been the ultimate gut punch on top of what happened to Chambers Bay. But the fact that he was able to pull that off and win it, I think, yes, I think that elevates him to the next level going forward.
Besides Dustin and perhaps besides Henrik Stenson, who was number four on our newsmakers list, what was interesting this year was that there were so many newsmakers that were really events themselves or were moments in time. We had a Sunday at the Masters with what we've talked about already with Jordan Spieth's collapse there and Danny Willett's victory, surprise win. That was our number six newsmaker. Our number three newsmaker being the Olympics and the return to of golf to the Olympics. Number two, the U.S. Ryder Cup win. Is there a defining moment of those events in your mind, Alex? Is there something that really stands out as really having been something again that in a few years we will remember and say, you know, oh, I remember this happening in 2016.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that the Ryder Cup and specifically the Patrick Reed versus Rory McIlroy match that's, you know, led off the Sunday single session will be talked about for ages. I mean, as it was going on, being there, it was I said it was the most amazing sporting event I'd ever been to. And I'm not even the biggest Ryder Cup guy. I prefer the majors more in terms of, I don't know, I just think they're more, they bring more prestige, they're more historical. But the Ryder Cup this year was so intense, and that match, the passion that Patrick Reed and Rory McIlroy both brought, the level of play, especially on that front nine, when they were trading birdies and eagles, and then certainly it, you know, reached a crescendo on the eighth hole when Rory makes that 50-foot putt, and then Patrick Reed answers him with a 25-footer for birdie, and he's wagging his finger at him. And, I mean, the place was just going absolutely nuts. And I just, you know, and then, of course, they even waited for each other, gave each other a little hug. I think they even realized just how special that moment was and that day was. And certainly, you know, U.S. comes out on top. I think the American golf fans will remember this Ryder Cup more because of that. But just the level of play, and then even later in the day, the Phil Mickelson versus Sergio Garcia match where, you know, they make about 20 birdies combined and have the match. I think the level of play that week was so good that it really was the standout event of the year.
Yeah, in my mind, when you think about a defining moment from the year, I do think that Ryder Cup victory, given obviously everything that had gone into the 2 years prior to that, the whole hubbub about the task force and you know, even that week, all the pressure that Phil Mickelson put back onto himself with some of the comments he had, and then the fact that they came through, and the level of golf, like you said, was so strong. I do think that's one that we'll be talking about for the future years to come. Jaime, you were at the Ryder Cup. You were at the Olympics as well. For you, because I know you came away from the Olympics much more impressed than I think perhaps you might have been heading into it. Was there a difference or something else symbolic in the Olympics that maybe stands out for the Ryder Cup, or how do you relate the two events?
Well, the Ryder Cup is a greater spectacle because there's so much anticipation, and the fans. I mean, now it's, you know, Minnesota is one of those, you know, golf stars areas when they do get golf, you know, it's just a tremendous outpouring of emotion. And so the atmosphere there was incredible. But I have to say that the Olympics had this unique feel of, you know, truly global sport. And with the backdrop of the greatest athletes in the world, it transcended, you know, the normal golf tournament. And it made it feel more important in a way. And the clincher for that was that it meant so much to the players. I'm not sure that they didn't know how they were going to react. But when you saw Justin Rose and what it meant to him, and Lydia Ko, you know, wanting it so badly, and Inbee Park actually winning it with some of the most brilliant golf of her career after she'd been injured, you noticed the passion actually might have been even higher. To me, the Americans were better than the Europeans in the Ryder Cup. So it wasn't the most compelling Ryder Cup, even though the backdrop of the task force was going to make it dramatic, and Mickelson put himself on the spot in such a way. I still thought the Americans were better than they were going to win. The Olympics, on the other hand, was golfers playing for, like, pure sport. And, you know, in today's world, when the money is so prevalent, not that it ruins the competition by any means, but when it's really just about the little, as Nick Faldo would say, you know, the little cups, in this case, the little medals, there was a real real emotional undercurrent to it that made everybody, I think, who was there feel really uplifted, and including the golf organizations that promoted the Olympics. It was exactly what they wanted. They wanted a global stage for a non-golf audience, and they got it way beyond what they expected.
Well, in addition to those two events, another event that really transcended the year, I think, was the Sunday at Troon, and Henrik Stenson and Phil Mickelson in that duel, and Stenson finishing it off with a 63 and winning the major, becoming the first Swedish player to win a major. You know, I'm wondering, from a standpoint of that, where does that lie this year? Because I know Golf Digest has done a tremendous feature about what that was like and the whole back and forth and how exciting that was. Does that get lost, do you think, at all now because of some of the other events of this year, or does that have a special place this year as well? Alex, what do you think?
Well, it's funny because you're right. It's taken a long time to even bring that up. And I think in any other year, that would be the standout moment for sure. But I think, like Jaime mentioned, the Olympics became such a big thing, was such a big deal for the players there. You know, guys who were just even going for a bronze medal. I wasn't there, but watching Sergio Garcia come up short on a putt on Sunday when he was in the hunt for the bronze, I mean, it looked like he you know, got stabbed in the gut. He reacted so painfully. So you could definitely see that. And then we mentioned the Ryder Cup. You kind of have that U.S. versus Europe battle already. So it's almost like we forgot about the Phil Mickelson versus Henrik Stenson U.S. versus Europe matchup because of the Ryder Cup was so, as Jaime said, such a spectacle. But certainly we can't overlook what those two guys did, the show they put on. And, you know, it was so good that you even had Jack Nicklaus tweet that he thought it was better than the duel in the sun with Tom Watson. I mean, Jaime would be able to answer that question better, but certainly the fact that it's even in the same breath as that shows just what an amazing show those two put on.
Jaime, what do you think in terms of where it ranks for the year and where it ranks now in terms of duels?
Well, I think it has enduring value because I think what we all love in golf is those moments when a great player, you know, kind of hits his peak, hits his A game on the biggest stage. And there haven't been that many of them. But, you know, you know Bobby Jones winning the Grand Slam, of course. But I know that Turnberry 77 had kind of a mythic sort of importance to golf purists. It was like, you know, the two best players, especially Nicklaus, probably the greatest player of all time, really just battling in a way that just separated themselves from everyone else on this incredible, you know, setting in Scotland at Turnberry, and that had and endures as this maybe the greatest showdown ever. And this approached that, and you know, I'd say probably you could argue that Stenson hit the ball better than either Nicklaus or Watson did. Now, you know, he didn't have the same battle mano a mano with Mickelson; they weren't quite as close, and he won by I think three. Mm-hmm. In the end. But the main thing was it was an exhibition of pure golf, and Phil played tremendously. So I think that'll be remembered as one of the two or three greatest showdowns in the history of golf, which I think means history right there.
Mm-hmm. The other breakout star from Troon was a gentleman that we just need to call Beef, and we know what we're talking about. I know, Alex, you've taken a liking to Mr. Andrew Johnston this year and his exploits. What do you think, why do you think his character resonated so much with so many people?
Well, I mean, he's just such a, he comes across as such like an honest character. I mean, you just, what you see is what you get. And he really just endeared himself to the fans there. But by Sunday, you know, you felt bad for the guys he was playing against. And the same thing at the PGA Championship. He took so much of the spotlight. Fans just screaming stuff as he walks down the fairways. And the amazing thing to me is that he just keeps smiling. And it looks like anyone who screams his name or cheers for him, he tries to find them in the crowd and smile and wave at them. And he just did that whole week. He was so appreciative of the support. You know, at some point it's going to have to get tiresome, I would think, even for him, even to have adoring fans like that, because you just wonder how he can even concentrate. And I know some of his playing partners have kind of hinted that it is tough to concentrate in those conditions, but certainly he opened up. He acknowledged the crowd that much. And again, he played some great golf. I mean, he finished tied for eighth that week. That really kind of put him on the map. I know it got him into a bunch of other events the rest of the year. Of course, he did enough in the Web.com finals to earn his PGA Tour card. So we're going to see him even more next year in America. And, you know, I think that can only be a good thing. Let's be honest, he doesn't look like a lot of these other golfers out there. He carries himself a little differently. He's got the beard. He's got the belly. And he just looks like he has fun out there, and people seem to enjoy that.
Yeah. Do you think it's the kind of thing that will transcend this year? I mean, do you think there'll be the same kind of following for him as he begins to play the PGA Tour in 2017? Or do you think this was kind of a unique circumstance?
Well, it certainly was a phenomenon for, you know, a couple months there. I think he's now going to have to back it up this year to keep that going. I think his first few events, of course, in the U.S., he'll draw huge crowds. But, yeah, if he's not in contention, it'll drop off a little bit. But from what he's shown, I mean, you know, he just last year was when he won his first event on European Tour. He's, you know, I think 28, so maybe somewhat of a little bit of a late bloomer. He you know, he wins, I think, the Spanish Open last year, and then again to finish in the top 10 at the Open. I think it was only maybe the second major he'd ever played in. So, you know, we don't know. We could just be scratching the surface with this guy. But, yeah, sure, after a while, he's probably going to have to back it up. Although, if he's the modern John Daly, we still see John Daly attract crowds, and he hasn't done anything for a long time.
I was going to say, just being there and getting a chance to see him, it was as much the spectacle for Daly, so perhaps that might be the same for Johnston. No, duh. Jaime, we did mention, unfortunately, the passing of Arnold Palmer, which became such a sad moment for the game, but an emotional one from the standpoint of just getting to really remember what he meant for the game. What was that like for you going through that? You attended the ceremony, the memorial service, and you wrote a lot, obviously, about what Palmer's impact was on the game. How is that going to live in the context of this year, do you think?
Well, it's going to be, someone's death usually comes in a golfer's life, even maybe a little less so than a regular athlete's, well after their prime years of playing. But I think what made Arnold so unique was he remained a giant way after he won his last tournament, which was, I think, 1973, if I'm not mistaken. And his prime was in the early 60s. So there was something special about him, much like Beef. There was a joy about Arnold Palmer that people fell apart of, I was surprised at how much emotion I felt at the church. And even thinking back now, if you loved golf growing up, certainly someone of my age, Arnold Palmer was just part of that, and so it was a little part of every golfer died. And I know that sounds a little melodramatic, but really he had that quality of being extremely natural and at the same time being this incredible player. And that combination made people feel closer to the game. And, so many people who watched Arnold Palmer always felt like, there was some kind of a connection, whether it was eye contact or whether it was an autograph or whether it was a moment that he just shared because he was so exuberant and loved playing so much. And there's just no substitute for someone like that. He had all those gifts of charisma, the way he looked and the way he swung and the way he related to people. So he was a magical guy, and that church was really full of a lot of love, and I thought the other thing about it was very authentic to him. It was right near his home in La Trobe. It's a modest campus where the St. Vincent College is. It's a nice, beautiful little basilica, but it's small. And the stories were really human ones from the speakers. It wasn't about, and then Arnold won the British Open in 1961, and it was more about what he's like at home, what he's like when, you played golf with him in a friendly round, and that was his magic, was the way he just connected as a human being.
Alex, you and I both didn't see him in his prime. We only got to watch highlights and whatnot, but he still meant so much, I know, to me, and I'm assuming to you, and obviously your Wake Forest connections perhaps even more so than me. But in terms of getting to relive his life through some of the tributes to him afterwards, did you get an even deeper appreciation for what he meant for the game, seeing the way the outpouring came out?
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. I mean, that was the story, obviously, for a week or 2 weeks, and the coverage that the funeral, the memorial got was just incredible. It was broadcast live. It was 3 hours long. All the luminaries who were there, who spoke, and Jaime makes a great point. It really wasn't a rundown of his accomplishments at all. In fact, you almost don't even talk about his accomplishments on the course. It's just what a great guy he was, how generous he was with his time, how he connected with people. And in the one time I got to meet him at a Wake Forest function, I felt that, and he was so nice. He took a picture with me. The guy who was taking the picture couldn't get my disposable camera to work, and Arnie was so patient, and we waiting, and again, it just meant the world to me. And I know millions and millions of people have kind of felt the same way. They've had that one little moment with him, and he's just taken the time throughout his life to do that. Just really special. And then, when you saw the outpouring and the way it was all covered, it wasn't overdone at all. Just that was everybody genuinely feeling that loss and wanting to show respect for him.
Jaime, was there a biggest surprise for you this year?
Wow. Well, I think Rory kind of rectified it. For a while there, I thought he was like in limbo. I'm going, has this guy lost the incentive, the motivation,
a lot of bad Sundays early in 2016.
The confidence, and was he going to be surpassed, was Jason Day just better than him? Because he seemed, and was Dustin Johnson just better than him? And I liked, so the I'd say, in a way, the surprise of his apparent demise and then the surprise of his resurgence. Mm-hmm. So he was the, I thought, kind of the guy where the pendulum swung back the farthest in 2016. It made him very interesting, and I think he's brought some momentum into next year. I think he realizes, you know, that, you know, he just can't be the most gifted guy and just sure. win. He has to refine what he has. He's got a gift, obviously, but he's got to really truly respect that gift and squeeze everything out of it, just like Tiger did. Mm-hmm. I mean, what made Tiger great was he left nothing on the table. He had the gifts, but no one outworked him. No one wanted it more. No one, you know, was tougher on Sunday. Those are things that Rory still has room for improvement in.
How about you, Alex? The biggest surprise for you this year?
Yeah, a little similar to what Jaime said is just the fact that you had four first-time major winners, because coming into this year, all you heard about was the big three. And, you know, of course, Rory McIlroy is part of that, along with Jordan Spieth and Jason Day. And as much as those guys had, I think they had won, what did they won? Five out of six before that majors. They came into this year and they got shut out. Mm-hmm. And it's not that any of the four major champs were unknowns or anything. They were all actually really good players. It's a really nice crew. But just the fact that those three guys, with all that they've accomplished, went shut out for a year, I think surprised pretty much everybody. And, you know, again, of course, it shows how tough it is to win majors. There's only four each year. You only have so many opportunities. But, again, with the way those guys played, and certainly, you know, Jason Day even, he had a great year. He finished, you know, he was in the mix in a couple of the majors. I know he had the best cumulative score in the four majors by a lot.
Won the players.
Won the three events, including the players. But the fact that he kind of wasted a season of good play and didn't get a major, I think will certainly, you know, nag at him.
Was there a biggest disappointment for you in terms of either a player or an event that didn't pan out the way you might have thought?
Well, yeah. For one event, it's certainly Jordan Spieth. I mean, he, you know, if this was someone else who, if this was Greg Norman, we'd be calling it the biggest choke of all time. We'd be saying he's Gagger. You know, I mean, he let a five-shot lead on the back nine slide, get away at Augusta. And that's just, you know, it's a historic collapse, let's be honest. So I think that was obviously for a one-time thing. That was the biggest disappointment. But then for a season, I would say that it's Jason Day, just because, like Jaime said, Rory did redeem himself at the end by winning the FedEx Cup. He played well at the Ryder Cup. But Jason Day kind of let all that momentum coming from winning the PGA the year before, winning those early events, winning at Bay Hill, winning the Players, the clear number one, and the fact that he didn't capitalize and win a major. And then at the end of the year, we saw him withdraw from his last two events with back injury, and then we saw him just kind of shut it down for the year. So he actually has more question marks now going into next year than any of those other guys, too. So for the whole season, I'd say Jason Day, which is kind of sad because he did have a nice year. And then obviously
still number one in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Still number one. But for the one event, we're going to remember Jordan Spieth letting that green jacket slip away.
How about you, Jaime? A biggest disappointment from anything this year?
Well, you know, I guess I hated to see the USGA sort of lose its authority, not completely, but have it decline because of what happened at Oakmont, and then even what happened at Cordoval in the Women's Open. Mm-hmm. Just unfortunate, but I'm sure the USGA will recover. But any time that, you know, the rules makers and the sort of the unspoken leaders of the game lose the public's confidence, that's not good for golf. And I think they're going to respond by maybe, well, they already have, you know, respond to that rule.
Sure.
that cost DJ a stroke and of course made Sunday so problematic at Oakmont with the uncertainty of whether there was going to be a penalty or not. That had to be rectified. So that was disappointing, but I think it's a short term thing. Biggest surprise, I'd say, was you know, Donald Trump winning the presidency and becoming probably, you know, the most important golfer in the world right now.
Yeah. Indeed, no, and that will play out and continue to play out, obviously, throughout the administration, throughout his term. So, for my money, I was a little disappointed that Ricky Fowler didn't do a little bit more this year. I think, you know, we've got a lot of expectations, or he's had a lot of expectations the couple years ago when he had the top five finishes in all the majors. He's won the Players, and with the other younger players having stepped up and many of them having gotten their major, we're still looking for Ricky to do that. You know, he's got plenty of time to still do it, and the career is obviously not over, but I guess I would have liked to have seen him do a little bit more this year personally. So, but one other thing. So assessing 2016, you can't help but then project a little about 2017 and wonder what we'll be talking about. Are there any specific storylines that you see that will be playing out as overarching things to watch in 2017, Alex?
Well, you know, I think if you had to pick one guy who's going to have the best year, I would still like Rory McIlroy. I think Jaime hit it on the head. He realizes he can't just be the most talented guy anymore. He's going to have to work a little harder. I think we even saw Dustin Johnson step up his work ethic this year, although I think his quote was that he dialed it up to a 7.5 out of 10 instead of a 5 out of 10 in terms of the effort scale, which, again, that scares everybody else. But I think of course Dustin Johnson, with that consistency, he will be there. But Rory just has these bursts, and we saw it obviously in the playoffs with him winning in Boston and then winning in Atlanta at the Tour Championship. We saw that he can get on these spurts, and we've seen him when he wins, you know, he's won a couple majors by 8 shots. I would be stunned if he does not win a major next year in 2017. I just think it's been too long. I think he's worked on his putting now. I think that's improved. And I think everything's all systems go for him next year. He's going to have a monster year.
Ooh, maybe the Masters. Maybe a career grand slam.
Yeah, so, maybe.
Jaime, yourself, anything you're really anticipating to be the big story in the new year?
I'm surprised, Alex didn't mention John Starks and Tiger. His two favorite athletes, but I would have to say
I held back.
I would have to say watching Tiger and his progress next year is going to be the most intriguing thing, and that was very encouraging what happened in the Bahamas. He's got a bigger test ahead of him, but there was a certain body language and attitude and joy that I saw in him at the Bahamas, apart from whatever he shot, that I thought was really encouraging. If he loves doing it and he's doing it for the right reasons, he's going to be good again.
Well, very good. Well, guys, again, thanks for joining me and recapping a 2016 season that I think we all do think was pretty interesting and did have a lot of memorable moments. And we appreciate all the listeners for joining us throughout the year. It's been great to be able to have these podcasts for you all. We hope you come back and listen to them again in 2017. If you haven't done so already, as we always say, please subscribe to us on iTunes. And until the new year, thanks for joining the Golf Digest podcast.